Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here we go. It's McCain versus Obama on the future of Iraq. Does it sound like 2008 all over again? After Islamist militants have continued to make gains in Iraq, flooding the border from Syria, President Obama said yesterday that he and his national security team won't rule anything out when it comes to a response. John McCain, for his part, didn't hold back on MSNBC this morning.
This has turned into one of the most serious threats to American security in recent history. It means that we are now facing an existential threat to the security of the United States of America.
Existential threat to the security of the United States of America. McCain also took to the Senate floor and called for the resignation of the entire Obama national security team. Let's discuss. Here is President Obama discussing the situation in Iraq and the U.S. response.
I don't rule out anything because we do have a stake in making sure that these jihadists are not getting a permanent foothold in either Iraq or Syria.
Joining us now, Kevin Barron.
Hello.
Executive editor of Defense One from the National Journal. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. How's it going?
It's going all right. So you heard the president there, everything on the table, or at least nothing is off the table. What does that actually mean?
Well, boots on the ground are off the table for sure. We're not going back into Iraq with soldiers anytime soon so far. But what is on the table, just in the last few minutes, I'm seeing CNN report that the Pentagon is going to move an aircraft carrier into the North Persian Gulf to give Obama those options. That means airstrikes. And real airstrikes, not just drones flying overhead to advise or assist the Iraqis. That's an option that's out there. John Kerry had some strong statements this morning to follow up. He's in London saying they're taking this seriously.
And Kerry told reporters that the administration will, quote, move rapidly. So do you have a sense of a timetable? Could we see airstrikes like this weekend?
We could. Yeah, we could. It depends. I think they said the carrier was in the southern Gulf or just outside, so it moves up and they're ready to go. That said, you don't even need the carrier, really. There are, you got to remember, there are three major U.S. bases in Kuwait across the border. There are others in the area, but that's the ideal scenario. I think first, like everything else, they have to consult with allies, they have to consult with Congress, and they've got to consult with the Iraqis of what's necessary. But, John McCain, I think, is making a lot of points. One of the ones that are hard to argue with is that this insurgent group, this ISIS, is really moving fast down toward Baghdad.
So listeners, any questions about this fast-moving situation in Iraq or opinions about what the U.S. should do, if anything, in response? 212-433-WNYC. For Kevin Barron, executive editor of Defense One from the National Journal, 212-433-9692. Now, Kevin, McCain's argument, which is the one he's consistently made since the negotiations for troop withdrawal in 2011, is that a residual force, some boots on the ground in Iraq, would have helped stabilize the country after the 2007 troop surge won, in his words, the war. So that's still looking backwards. Is he calling for the U.S. to send troops back into the country, or just mostly arguing that he was right?
I think it's a little bit of both. He has not said flatly, let's send troops in. It's been a whole lot of, we need to do something. We need to do it now. And Obama should fire his team. And we should bring back General Petraeus and General Keane and the crew from the old days, General Mattis from the Marine Corps. McCain has never let this go, especially the surge. Every time Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dempsey, goes before him, Dempsey was opposed to the surge, and McCain lets him have it and reminds him every time, tries to get him to say, I was right and you were wrong. And yesterday when he went to the floor, it was one big, gigantic, I was right and you were wrong on a lot of fronts. Now, your first question about would a few hundred or a few thousand residual troops have prevented this? It's a humongous hypothetical. That was a decision made before Syria was happening, which is really the fuel for where this insurgency has come from, just as much as anything inside of Iraq. And the residual forces that were being talked about back in 2011 were a continuation of what was already there. If you recall, by the end of 2011, American troops weren't doing much fighting. They were patrolling. They pulled back from patrolling and were really sitting on bases and advising the Iraqis who were going out. They were providing cover, providing intelligence. It's hard to argue that anything more would have been happening. Or, you know, now would an American presence have deterred an insurgent uprising? Who knows? More importantly than that, what a lot of the people from the Pentagon, the military, State Department are pointing to is the political disunity that followed Nouri al-Maliki's ascension to the presidency there, and since then, how he's, you know, as a Shiite minority leader, has pushed out the Sunnis and helped, you know, do everything possible to prevent unifying Iraq. That's really where a lot of the fuel for this comes from.
How about, to be fair to President Obama, didn't this come from President Bush? Wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it the Bush administration in its last days that tried to negotiate a status of forces agreement with Iraq that included the pullout, but keeping some residual forces there, but Iraq wouldn't agree to hold them harmless from any Iraqi prosecution if they commit alleged crimes there, and the U.S. wouldn't stand for that. And so the U.S. said, no troops if they may be prosecuted under Iraqi law for things they do there. That happened, right? But did it happen under Obama or did it happen under Bush?
Well, the final decision happened under Obama. It was 2011 when Obama made the final call and said, this is it. We're not going to stick around anymore because the agreement was expiring. But you're right. That was the major point. Wherever troops go in the world, there's some sort of immunity protection so that if the troops make a mistake and get in trouble or in trouble with the law, they're handed back to American forces for prosecution if possible. That was the sticking point. But the other side of that argument was that is that the White House really didn't do anything to push it. And if you look back at the time, you know, I was a Pentagon reporter covering Secretary Gates, and it was a whole lot of, well, if the Iraqis really want us, they would let this happen and make it happen, but it's up to them. It's really up to them. The White House was in no means begging, mm-hmm. doing whatever they can to keep American forces in Iraq, but they weren't at the same time begging to get out. They said, look, this is the deal. You take it or leave it. And when the Iraqis said, we're good, the Americans said, all right, we're out, which is, you know, what the country wanted, especially 2 years after Obama's election.
So it was Obama, but yeah, Maliki didn't want us there and we didn't want to be there. So, and now look where we are. But Susan in Santa Monica also wants to bring up Bush. Hi, Susan. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I have to tell you, it is such a horrible feeling. I just woke up, and of course, this has been happening, and I've been sitting around saying to people, look what Bush did in the first place. And it is. All of this is happening because of what he did in 2003. And people are talking, of course, about what's going to have to happen now. But somebody needs to remind people that we wouldn't be in this position if we had taken the proper action in 2003. And that man, I will never forgive him.
Susan, thank you. Well, certainly if we're talking about Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist militants, this is a force that didn't exist in Iraq under Saddam Hussein. Lots of other bad things did. He caused trouble internationally in other ways, but there was no Al-Qaeda link. Even though he went into Iraq on the premise of stopping him from having weapons of mass destruction because he might someday share them with Al-Qaeda, if people remember that old debate from 2002. So is Susan on solid ground for you with, you know, all your experience in covering the Pentagon and everything? I mean, she's right as far as it goes, right? There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq. There was no Islamist force in Iraq that had international potential until the U.S. destabilized the situation and opened all these pores.
Yes, that's true. But, you know, like you said, it's old history. It's 12 years on. I think that doesn't address the fact of, at the same time, probably because the Iraq war happened and because Saddam Hussein was toppled and something else happened, there was some part of that fueled the Arab Spring that's happened in the last couple of years. It gave, you know, there's plenty of evidence that gave some modicum of hope and inspiration to the democracy movements that have tried to take hold, which have further destabilized the region, for, you know, including Syria. And again, you know, we can't talk about Iraq this time without talking about Syria.
Right.
You know, this goes
where the same thing is happening without the U.S. having gone in. In fact, with the U.S. having resisted going in.
Right.
And so maybe the Arab Spring in 2008 would have happened with or without the Iraq war. But maybe they would have tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein themselves and we'd be in the same complex situation with all these factions. But we don't know.
Maybe. It's a whole lot of maybes and a whole lot of backward thought. You know, I think the most current, if you want to look backwards to the most current topic that's of interest, I think it's like McCain's argument with Dempsey about Syria. You know, McCain was on the side with some Democrats, including Carl Levin, earlier on, asking for some direct military strikes into Syria, something to help the rebels, an air cover, missile strikes from the sea, anything. You know, we were talking about this in September. Just in September, we were talking about a consideration of cruise missile strikes from submarines in the Mediterranean against the Assad regime. None of that happened, and this Syrian insurgency exploded. Not just the war, the insurgency. You know, I just was in Tampa around spring break, where this Central Command Commander General Austin, who actually was the final commander of the Iraq War, said that in 1 year the number of foreign fighters in Syria went from 800 to 8,000. Mm. In 1 year, that was an unbelievable statistic. And that's, I think, how fast this has happened and taken hold in the region.
And I think Danny in Manhattan has a question about how fast this seems to be unraveling. Danny, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was saying that. Considering all the intelligence and surveillance that's taking place in that part of the world, it is very suspicious that these people were only, the ISIS forces were only discovered once they get right outside the gates of Baghdad. Number two, that the Iraqi forces were fully professionalized and armed, but it appears that they were deliberately ordered to stand down and then to walk away for a pretext to get the United States back into the Iraqi war. And number three, this is really a civil war, and under international law, the United States is not a threat at all to anyone. This is not a threat to U.S. interests. It's way across the other side of the world, and it's a civil war. Thank you very much.
Danny, thank you very much. Well, he's got a few things in there. Assuming I can dismiss the conspiracy theory that somebody in the U.S. ordered Maliki to order his troops to stand down so to withdraw the U.S. back in, I'm not sure we want to spend time on that. But on this idea of whether it is irrelevant to U.S. national security, as Danny says, or an existential threat, as John McCain said in the clip we played.
Right, right.
What's the argument?
Well, the existential threat, that's you know, and McCain wants to hang his hat on that, he's going to be in trouble. I think you can clearly say this is an existential threat to the Iraqi government and the Syrian, Syrian freedom, I guess. But there's never been a convincing argument, at least to the country, to the United States, that Iraq was an existential or is an existential threat to this country. You know, unfortunately, for that argument, there are humongous oceans that separate us.
But we're talking about – we're not talking about Saddam Hussein here. We're talking about jihadis. And,
right.
And one could argue that jihadis are the existential threats to the United States because they're the ones who want to stage terrorist attacks without regard to political consequences.
Well, I think people think it's an overstretch to think that, but that doesn't mean it's not a threat. Look, I just wrote a piece from Paris at the end of Chuck Hagel's trip last week where, you know, I spent 2 days walking the city because Obama was in the country and we weren't covering Obama, but it was over the D-Day anniversary of Normandy. And what my thought was, as I sat on the Arc de Triomphe, was, you know what? Al-Qaeda is never going to march down the Champs-Élysées. And no combination of Al-Qaeda and ISIS and Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram and any of them are going to do that. That's an existential threat to a country. But that doesn't mean they're not going to bomb the Arc de Triomphe. It doesn't mean they're not going to try to bomb the United States again. And that's been, I think, the argument of why we've got to keep the fight over there and keep it against, you know, keep it where it is, keep these safe havens from happening. And that's something that the Obama administration has bought into, has doubled down on. That's something that Obama in his most recent West Point speech said is what we're going to keep on doing.
The drone strikes to go after them where they are, their camps are, that kind of thing.
Drone strikes, special operations troops. You know, again, that's different than what we're talking about in Iraq now, because these are places like, you know, Yemen and Central Africa or, you know, North Waziristan, which are low risk to any U.S. forces. And it's a low political risk, honestly, to send small troops of special ops guys or drone strikes to do those small jobs.
And
this is not a small job. This is Pentagon's estimating, I think, 3,000 to 5,000 fighters making their way toward Baghdad. It's questionable if they could actually take Baghdad, but that doesn't matter. Look at what they've taken already.
And one could argue that the adage, a hammer looking for a nail, should be updated to a McCain looking for an existential threat. But now John Boehner, too. Listen.
It's not like we haven't seen over the last 5 or 6 months these terrorists moving in, taking control of western Iraq. Now they've taken control of Mosul. They're 100 miles from Baghdad. And what's the president doing? Taking a nap.
Taking a nap, Speaker of the House Boehner. So we've got 30 seconds left. Is this a rising partisan tide now to call for U.S. airstrikes in Iraq? Does the Republican Party have the stomach to hang their hat on this? And are the Democrats any more resistant to it?
Yes, and maybe. I think, you know, the Republicans have never let go of this, especially John McCain. And so I think the minute they hit Mosul is when he let loose, and he's really been fuming about this. I don't think this is him looking, you know, to bomb anything he can. This is Iraq. This is specific. He thinks it's only been 2.5 years since U.S. troops left. We were responsible for what happened there. We caused the mess, whether you agree with why or not. So we've got some sort of responsibility toward it. That's what the administration is saying. That's what Obama is expected to say as soon as he walks out to the South Lawn in a few minutes now.
And we will be listening in on that. We thank Kevin Barron, executive editor of Defense One from the National Journal. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And have a great weekend, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.